Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Starts now. Hello, hello, hello. It is
hello.
Let's go there. Hi, Shira.
Hi.
Up in, where, I'm going to say Massachusetts. You're in Miami, right?
I am in Miami. It is beautiful here.
That. Miami, Miami.
I love that song.
What is that song? Is that the Will Smith song?
Bienvenido a Miami. Dancing the he's on all night.
Oh, it is Will Smith. That is the Will Smith song.
And the office here, by the way, you should be jealous because it's a completely new office and it smells good.
Guess what? I'm not jealous because anywhere that I am is a treasure and a treat. So,
of course.
You should be jealous that I'm not there to experience it with you. Thank you.
Nice twist.
But
yeah.
Shout out to Miami Power 96.5 HD3. We love you all out there. And of course, you know, we actually want to give a special shout out to Pittsburgh 107.9 HD3. We have some new fam, a part of our Channel Q family. So we want to say hi.
Yeah, as we continue to grow and conquer. Well, welcome to the Channel Q fam and movement. We appreciate you. And we are Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan. We're here daily. We catch you up on the news of the day and so much more.
Yes, honey. I mean, literally so much more. And I mean, Shira is always on the go, which I love. I love it. You know, I do miss you, but I also love it when we are kind of like, you're like, at, like we get to see each other through the screen and you're just not here. Let's just be great.
All right, you know why, though?
Let's
no, because distance makes the heart grow fonder.
It does.
Sometimes you need a little break from each other.
Yes.
We're living just like anyone else. We are like anyone else who needs a break from each other, like any couple.
No, we're like Lindsay Lohan in The Parent Trap, and we're the twins.
Wow. Okay, I'm trying to imagine that comparison.
But yeah, I'm super excited, very excited. How's Miami really been going? Because I know being in a station and you're doing some really cool things out there.
Yeah, doing some cool things. It's, you know what? It was funny. They said a cold front was coming. And let me tell you, it was like almost 90 degrees. And they're like, yeah, it's cold for us.
So I know on the journey of Shira's single life, have you found a Miami boyfriend yet?
What the? I've been only here for a few hours.
Well,
give me a break.
Shira, you know how you move fast. You know how you move fast. You know, one minute Shira's like, oh my God, I just met someone. The next minute I'm engaged.
Oh yeah. You know me. No, I'm trying to focus on work, Ryan, and just keep myself together. Although the IT person right here at the station was kind of cute.
Shira, that is HR. HR, abort, abort, abort.
I'm just giving him a compliment. You know why I'm giving him a compliment? Because it's International Men's Day.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. I'm a male.
Yes.
And it's my day.
And it's here to celebrate everyone who's male and who identifies as a man. So congratulations on being a man today on International Men's Day. What does being a man mean to you, Ryan?
Are you kidding me? Being a man to me, I don't know.
People ask that on International Women's Day. Like, what does being a woman mean to you?
I guess, to be honest, that's a weird, it just feels like a weird question. It's like, because obviously you have your sorts of privilege, and me being a man just doesn't really define who I am. Because
there you go.
I halfway don't even really identify all the way as a male. But you never know.
So that's why I asked the question, because I wanted your take.
I'm just a queer person trying to live my life, my queer POC life. And I think if really people want to really, you know, celebrate International Men's Day, I think it's important to use your privilege as a man to help uplift other voices that are marginalized and not as privileged when it comes to this world and society that we're living in.
I agree. Period. And just know where you stand and all that, because a lot of people a lot of people fight back against it these days.
It's just weird to say like there's a International Men's Day. It's just, I don't know. It's
you think that's like Pride Parade, like the street Pride Parade?
Yeah, it does. It's just like, oh, we're celebrating being a man.
I don't don't know. I think everyone deserves to celebrate something. I'll celebrate anything every day of the week.
But I think it's more so to, I feel like for International Men's Day, it should be to highlight, like you said, mental health and really helping men feel comfortable in feeling their feelings and talking about it and feeling, you know, like there is a safe space for them to be like vulnerable creatures.
Yeah, and the evolution of what it is to be a man. And you mentioned, which is something I didn't mention as we were kind of, I guess, making fun of it a bit. But it is a day to also talk about issues that men face, like mental health. And so, and like we bring up, not like it's a buzz term, but like the toxic masculinity, which I brought up once to a date and he almost didn't call me back.
He probably almost exploded. Did he call you back though?
He still wanted to date me even after we did not agree on many very core issues, and he tried to make out with me after that, and yeah, no.
Well,
that is not a turn on.
I hope you did not date him.
No, I didn't. Let's move on to some more what's trending in the news right now. It was the second round of hearings that continued with House attorneys questioning former U.S. envoy to Ukraine, Kurt Volker, and former NSC, that's the National Safety Council official, Tim Morrison. Of course, it's the impeachment inquiry. It's just never ending.
I mean, it's a lot going on. Today was, we talked about it briefly yesterday with Ken Charles, and it's just a lot going on, and I hope everyone is paying attention, because, you know, we did talk about, you know, not that many people are really paying attention to what we need to be listening to. And I was in the car actually on the way here in an Uber, and the guy, the driver was listening to it. And I was like, hey, could you turn it up? And he was like, oh, wait, you want to hear? You want to listen? I was like, yes, of course I want to listen. Like, this is important stuff.
Yeah. Well, Pence aide Jennifer Williams and NSC aide Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman also testified this morning. Let's talk about the key takeaways. So Williams, Pence aide Jennifer Williams, found the July 25th call unusual. Also, Volker said the alleged corruption by then VP Biden in Ukraine was a conspiracy theory. White House officials said the national security community did not back Ukraine, the Ukraine aid freeze that Trump wanted to do. And Vindman said that Giuliani's role in Ukraine affairs was certainly not helpful.
Yeah, but we got to move on because, you know, Shira, Pete Buttigieg is some real hot mess of some stuff recently. You know, he put out his Douglas policy, which is a policy that is dedicated to trying to garner up support from black supporters. Well, his latest plan ended up having 400 people apparently endorse him. But guess what? Plot twist, half of them, like a lot of them weren't even black, and a lot of them didn't even support him or endorse him. And we actually have one of those 400 people that actually signed, Tamika Isaac Devine. She's a Columbia City Councilwoman who's actually joining us, and we're going to be diving into that story up next in What's Trending.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, so this next story is pretty crazy and does not put Pete Buttigieg in a good place. Last month, an op-ed ran in HBCU Times. It covers news about historically black colleges, and it said, there is one presidential candidate who has proven to have intentional policies designed to make a difference in the black experience.
Yeah.
And guess who that is? Hey. You might be surprised. Pete Buttigieg. Plus, the piece was signed by 400 supporters about the Douglas Plan. And in July, Buttigieg unveiled the Douglas Plan. It was named in honor of Frederick Douglass, which his website describes as a comprehensive and intentional dismantling of racist structures and systems.
Which, here's the thing. I will give him this. The plan that he set out there is something that a lot of you other candidates aren't really, really talking about. And so I do think he is trying to figure out a way to garner that support, especially after having his reputation in South Bend, Indiana, where he hasn't really handled the black or brown community there really well, especially when it comes to police brutality. And he's like polling less than, I believe it's 1% when it comes to black or brown people in voting. So he has a lot of work to do.
Oh, yeah.
But this situation that we're about to dive into just got so messy.
Yeah, and Biden, by the way, is at 40%. So there's a big gap.
Well, of course.
So going back to this op-ed, the support was led by three well-known black South Carolina Democrats, Columbia City Council member Tamika Isaac Devine, State Representative Ivory Thigpen, and the state party's Black Caucus Chair Johnny Cordero. That's according to the Washington Post. And it said, we are over 400 South Carolinians, including business owners, pastors, community leaders, and students. Together, we endorse his Douglas Plan for Black America, the most comprehensive roadmap for tackling systemic racism offered by a 2020 presidential candidate.
Right.
But then the twist is that it was revealed, according to this post-investigation, that Buttigieg persuaded hundreds of prominent Black South Carolinians to sign onto the plan, even if they are not supporting his candidacy.
Yeah, so, you know, which is why we're bringing in our next guest who's actually involved in this, and it was actually one of the names that you just said. Councilwoman Tamika Devine is on the phone with us to let us know kind of her experience and everything that she thought about this entire plan. Hi, Tamika.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
So good. Thank you for joining us. You know, with my understanding, you do support the Douglas plan, but you didn't endorse his presidency. So did you feel like misled after the news broke?
You know, I personally did not feel misled when I was contacted by the campaign. Mm-hmm. They only asked for my reading and review of the plan, and then said, if I feel like it is a good plan, would I be willing to articulate my support of the plan? So they were very clear with me. It wasn't until, I guess, after the rollout of the endorsements of the plan that I think I started getting contact by people who were questioning whether or not it was an endorsement of the plan and the candidate or just the plan. So I, you know, wanted to make it very clear that I've not endorsed a candidate for president yet. I'm still doing my due diligence on all the candidates. But part of my due diligence is looking at what their plans for implementation are. And this plan did impress me.
So what was your reaction, though, when you saw the op-ed?
So interestingly enough, I did not see it initially. I did, you know, and I will say I did ask the campaign to send it to me before it went out, and I did not receive that. But I happened to be at here in Columbia, South Carolina, Benedict College. One of our HBCUs hosted a presidential forum a few weekends ago, and that was, I guess, the day of the release of the op-ed.
Yeah.
And so when I was there, I was approached by a staff person of one of the other campaigns that I had told I'm not endorsing yet. I'm still looking at the candidates. Mm-hmm. And they were under the impression I had endorsed Mayor Pete. And I explained to them, no, I hadn't. And I really didn't think anything of it. And then later on in the day, another staff person of a different campaign approached me as well. And so then it made me think, I'm like, okay, this is two people asking me. So I said, why would you think that I've endorsed a candidate? You know, I haven't done that yet. Mm. And they explained to me that they had seen something that they perceived as me endorsing Mayor Pete as a candidate. Mm. So I did ask them to send it to me. That person actually never sent it to me, but then later when I was contacted by other media, I did see it. And I could see by reading it, you know, a lot of folks kind of read, you know, globally or kind of from, you know, the big part, the headline and everything else, I could see that people may have assumed one thing or another. But when I actually saw the press release that was sent out, to me, it was clear that it was endorsement of the plan.
So from the press release and versus what everyone saw in the media, where do you think his team went wrong? Because, I mean, the next step in this, where what really happened was on the site of it all, there was a photo of a Black woman and her child. And it was actually a photo from, it was based on some woman in Kenya. And they made it seem like it was an African-American and the lady was just African. So there seems like there is a disconnect when it comes to Pete Buttigieg's team and his whole entire goal of trying to, you know, garner support from Black and brown supporters.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that that's probably, yeah, part of the team, the strategist on the team feeling like, okay, this is how we're going to put it out there. I really do think it probably was not the best rollout. And
girl,
certainly
it was
not.
It was messy.
And certainly not a way, I think, to, you know, if you're going to put it out there, another reporter had asked me, I guess, based on the names of the supporters, you know, a little less than half were not African-American. And, you know, I actually don't have a problem with that because I think and for bold policies like this, if you're going to implement it, you need a diverse coalition to work towards getting those things implemented. So I don't have a problem with the fact that you do have supporters that are non-African-American that have signed on to it. But I do think that there needs to be clarity on, you know, what you're putting out there, because I think that at this point, Mayor Pete is spending so much time in explaining the rollout and why you did this and why you did that, instead of actually talking about the policies in the plan, which is why I felt I could support it, because these are all issues and that are near and dear to me, especially as an elected official. And I want our community to be talking about these and asking all the candidates, you know, what are their plans to make sure that you are addressing economic inequality within our communities and job creation and everything else. So I really feel like, based on the fact that they didn't roll it out correctly, the focus is on the rollout and his missteps instead of the actual plan, which I would hope that we can hopefully talk about, in the future.
Well, don't you think that's because there have been missteps in how he's approached the community and what he continues to try to do? It feels a bit forced.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, certainly being mayor of South Bend is a different campaign than running for president of the United States.
Come on, you better say that.
So, you know, I think that, you know, there are strategic things that he needs to be doing. I've been in constant communication with his team, and my husband and I have actually been hosting meet and greets at our house for variety of candidates. We've hosted about 5 so far. We've got 2 more scheduled, and so I've offered them, and they've expressed an interest in having it, but his interaction here when he comes to South Carolina has not been, you know, he's not on the ground a whole lot. And then the events that I have known about have been more smaller events. Some have been invitation only, and that's not, you know, those to me strategically are not where you need to be if you're going to garner support. You need to have more opportunities to speak directly to the people and interact with them, not just, you know, private small town halls where the person answering the question, asking questions, is the organizer and not the people from the public.
So, Councilwoman Tamika, do you feel like this plan is enough to actually garner the support, or do you feel like that ship has kind of sailed? Because this does feel like it's a mistake after a mistake. And so where do you think he goes, you know, further in this?
You know, I would love to see him, number one, acknowledge, the missteps in the rollout, which for me personally, they've done that on Friday when the, you know, articles kind of started rolling. His campaign reached out to me, apologized and said, you know, if there's been any misinterpretation of your support, you know, we want to apologize, et cetera. So I feel like that was very good to come directly to me and say, hey, this was not our intention and we hope you, you know, take our apology. And so I think that's fine with me. I think certainly he needs to acknowledge it, you know, whether it be tomorrow night at the debate or any other form. He needs to acknowledge, hey, you know, I want to focus on, you know, what the plan is. I acknowledge maybe missteps in rolling it out and maybe how the perception that people have had may not be congruent with his intent in rolling it out. He wasn't intending to mislead anybody or anything else. He just wanted to, he wanted people who would be particularly interested in the plan to read it and then say whether or not they support it. And then I really think he needs to take the plan out into the community. I think the plan is good, and I know a lot of people would be interested to know his plan if elected, to be able to implement some of the things that he's addressing in the plan, but they're not going to read it based on, you know, the conversation going left. So he's going to need to be active, and I would suggest he do that through, you know, doing town halls, independent, you know, meet and greets, you know, question and answer sessions, and really, you know, be able to take the plan directly to the people.
Well, Tamika, thank you so much for joining us again, and we know how busy you are, and
yes,
obviously
you are.
This is a huge deal.
Councilwoman Tamika,
Columbia City Councilwoman Tamika Isaac Devine, thanks again. Thank you. We're now moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. So what's the tea, Ryan?
All right, we got pop culture stuff. Taylor Swift, we have a little update with that. And then we also got to find out if Halsey is pregnant. So don't go anywhere because we'll be right back.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, we are back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day, and we got to talk real quick about Taylor Swift. You know, there's
again?
I know. I'm really actually kind of very tired talking about her, too. But there is an update, a small little update. You know how she was going through that whole entire thing where she wasn't able to perform her old songs at the AMAs for her honored situation? Well, she will now be able to perform her old songs. A statement from Big Machine Label Group, that's her old former label, confirmed that they come to an agreement which would allow the singer to perform her old songs live at the ceremony.
Ah, thank God. I was really losing sleep about this one.
Oh, were you? Same was, I mean, all of the white girl tears were coming down my face. The news comes after Swift publicly slammed Scott Borchetta and Scooter Braun for blocking the use of the songs to which they own the masters. So, yeah, I guess all of the backlash and everything, they had to figure everything out. And so, Taylor Swift, shout out to you. You can still perform, and I can go back to not being a major fan of hers. So, finally, yay, the world is right back to where it needs to be. But when we come back, you know, I did tease, is Halsey pregnant? Because, honey, there was some pictures where she, you know, her and Evan Peters were touching on the stomachs and she looked a little, you know, some happening. So find out what she has to say and what the rumors are going, what happened. So we'll be right back.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, honey, is Halsey preggers? I have no clue, but we are continuing What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And we got to dive into it because we love Halsey here at Channel Q. We love her here at radio.com in general. You know, she was a surprise performer at We Can't Survive, her sister station, Amp Radio's, you know, whole moment. And she looked really good there. But I guess she has a new boyfriend who I actually did not know until around Halloween. Evan's Peter. He's a famous actor, you know, American Horror Story.
Well, he's a hottie. And I can't believe how quickly she left that other guy.
Yeah.
Other rock star guy.
Well,
rocker.
To be honest, they had a very toxic relationship and it was like really, really
no, the field. Other, there was two rockers anyway.
Oh, you're talking about not G-Eazy, but the
Young
no,
Bloods
Young
or
Blood.
Something?
Yeah, Young Blood, the one that really, yeah. He looks like he never took a shower in his day in his life. Like, he looks really smelly. No, he did. If you look at him, he looks dirty. Well, all of a sudden, you know, her and Evan have only been dating for about 2 months here. And rumor has it that the couple are already basically, you know, living for each other. I mean, you can see them, you know, strolling in Santa Monica, basically smooching out the beach. But it was a paparazzi photo that just triggered all of these recent, you know, rumors about them being pregnant. So basically on Sunday they were together and it had people talking because Halsey is seen gazing very passionately into Evan's eyes as they both touch her stomach. So obviously, you know, everyone was freaking out saying,
yeah,
she's preggers. This is the moment. She's, you know, not ruined her career, but she's now... you know, she's about to become a mommy. But before, you know, the rumors can actually get out of hand too much, you know, she had to most definitely shut them down. And here's what she said. She said, still not pregnant, still just allergic to gluten, still love pancakes.
So, like, what happened? Like, they had a great breakfast, and then she's like, oh, my God, feel my gluten stomach.
Well, that's what she said. So she cited that the stomach touching was a result of her eating pancakes with gluten despite being allergic. So, honey, she had the runs. She needed to go to the bathroom.
God, very visual.
She had stomach cramps. She was like very, she had an upset stomach. And so he was
celebrities,
trying to,
they're just like us.
He was trying to comfort her. And then Halsey tweeted again saying, is it a boy? Is it a girl? No, it's pancakes.
We've all been there, Halsey. Thank you for making us all feel acceptable.
I mean,
in our own binge eating.
I was there this morning. But it's okay. It's okay. Halsey, I'm super happy you're not preggers yet. I want you to be preggers, but I also want you to date Evan longer than 2 months. So if you want to know more about this story and any other What's the Tea entertainment pop culture story that we love to spill, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com for more and keep us favorited on that radio.com app.
And now we've got a twist in the Jeffrey Epstein death. We'll give you the latest details in this murder mystery coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, let's get into what's trending in the news right now. Top of the hour.
Yes, yes, let's do it.
This is all about Jeffrey Epstein. We've got some updates. Two prison guards who were supposed to be watching Mr. Epstein the night he died have been arrested. And I love our producer Vanessa goes, that's not fair. Are we sure about that?
Wait, well, what's the part that's not fair? I'm confused.
That they got arrested.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, let's be real here. If you really want to dive deep dive into these conspiracies, it's one of those things where who let the people in? There had to be something happening.
But
there.
Look at what happens. Okay, the Bureau of Prisons employees are facing these federal charges related to their alleged failure to check on him before he was found hanged in his cell. They are the first charges related to the criminal investigation into the death of Epstein, who, if you might not remember, he was a convicted pedophile. So this is what went down. Instead of checking on Epstein in the high security unit every half hour like they were supposed to, supposedly the two prison workers fell asleep for hours. Isn't that questionable? And falsified records to cover the fact up. No. If they're falling asleep for hours,
no,
I mean.
No, something could have been like dropped into their drink and coffee.
They also lied to cover that up. The two were suspended afterwards while the warden in charge was reassigned over the major lapses in protocol. Something fishy is going on here.
It sounds like Shonda Rhimes wrote it. Like, from like, I mean, How to Get Away with Murder or something. This is what this sounds like.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll see what's going to go down very soon. But we will all be watching because this keeps getting weirder and weirder.
No, to be honest, I don't really care about Jeffrey Epstein, whatever his name is.
I mean,
he's like, let him rest now. I mean,
at this point,
he was a pedophile when he was alive, so let him live, go to sleep now.
I think it's more his family is trying to get some answers.
Oh, I see that.
Now let's move on to this study that shows transgender children raised as the gender with which they identify will hit all the healthy development milestones. This is actually a really important study. A researcher,
and it's to close out Trans Awareness Week, by the way.
Yes, that's great.
It's coming to a close. It's today's the last day.
Oh, really? Yes. Okay, so perfect timing. Well, a researcher at the University of Washington conducted the largest study on trans children ever and told Newsweek that it was virtually impossible to tell trans subjects from cisgender counterparts. The study followed social transitions for 317 transgender children ages 3 to 12, as well as 189 siblings to the subjects, and 316 cisgender who served as a control group. And according to Celine Gulgos, who did the research, she said that they made sure to include a range of personalities in the study. There were tomboy girls, both trans and cis, for example. And this is what she stressed. This study does not show that, in fact, not all trans girls or cis girls want to wear frilly pink dresses or play with dolls. We, in fact, see plenty of trans kids violating these stereotypes, just as we see cis kids do so. And the findings do show that early social transitions won't force children into adopting a different identity, which is, I know, something that a lot of these naysayers and really transphobes are saying. And now we have research to prove that that's not the case. Now, an expert in gender identity, Simona Giordano, and a reader in bioethics at the University of Manchester Law School, also told Newsweek in this article about this whole study that it provides reassurances to families and clinicians with trans youth, saying that enabling a child to choose freely toys, clothes, hairstyle, a name and pronoun, or even to present in the experienced gender outside the domestic environment does not cause children to become transgender or later transsexual adults.
So this seems like a study that everyone should read. I mean, not even if you are trying to, if you don't even have kids, I think it's something to be said about understanding that experience and understanding if you're actually going to be, one, an advocate of this and talking about this or even trying to stand up for this, you have to know the information. You have to be educated. So this is something that everyone should be reading.
Yep. So go check that out and that article in Newsweek right now. Now, moving on, this week, the Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai proposed the FCC move forward with establishing 988 as the National Suicide Prevention and Mental Health Services Hotline. This is a really big deal also. This is what he had to say. This crisis is disproportionately affecting at-risk populations. 20 veterans die by suicide every day. Between 2008 and 2016, there were more than 6,000 veteran suicides each year. Now, their recommendation to create this three-digit hotline was originally made this past August, following a report that showed a three-digit number would improve access for those in crisis. And, of course, we know 911, right? That actually, when they started implementing that, it significantly increased the hotline's effectiveness.
Well, here's the thing. I think the reason why we wanted to really highlight this is because here at Radio.com, you know, we are really big believers in mental health. And, of course, our I'm Listening initiative that we do, which is our signature program that uses, you know, collective voices across all of our stations in 47 communities to engage in an open dialogue about mental health. And we recently did it. It's a beautiful live stream. And so it's something so important that, you know, there's this national suicide hotline number that is just easy three numbers. This could be like life-saving.
It's
work.
A game changer. Yeah,
yeah,
and I wonder how it's going to work. And of course, I'm sure there's going to be a learning curve to that. Yeah. And there will be things that are called out, but it is a great first step. And how it works is after dialing 988, you can press 1 for specialized support and counseling, including text and chat functions. And that same line currently answers an average of 1,800 to 1,900 calls a day. 3.5 million calls since it was launched in 2007, which I didn't even know it was around. The 988 number could also help to make specialized resources more available to other affected populations like the LGBTQ community. So there you go. That was some what's trending in the news, top of the hour. Now, coming up, you know those mini shampoos and toiletries we like to steal? I mean, take home from hotels?
I was going to say, yes, you are completely right that I steal them, and that's what they're there for.
Well, some hotels are wanting to get rid of them for good. We'll tell you why after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, everyone is trying to save the environment these days, and now Hyatt is trying to make an impact, announcing plans to reduce single-use plastics, including those tiny shampoo bottles. And they're actually becoming the last international hotel brand to do so, which I didn't realize that they're the last one. But that's really interesting. Well, this might make some of us sad because we all love to bring those back home with us. Because they're very convenient, aren't they?
Oh, of course, honey. And if whatever new system they have, I know I will manage to still take those.
Oh, you'll find something to steal in that room.
Yes, yes, yes.
But, you know, getting rid of these plastic bottles can have a long-term sustainability benefits. They also announced wanting to tackle disposable water bottle use, and they're going to increase water stations in public spaces so people can refill the reusable bottles they have and provide bottled water only upon request for meetings or events. Now, also last month, California became the first state to ban single-use hotel toiletries. And here to talk to us more about this is Sophia Lee, a New York-based journalist focusing on the sustainability space. Thanks for being here with us today.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, Sophia, welcome to the show.
We are live radio. What's up?
What's up?
What's up? Sophia's amazing. So, all right, let's get into this. I think the big question here is sometimes how big of a difference will this make long term, not having these like little mini bottles being used at hotels?
Oh, huge. We've already seen that it's made such a huge difference. Edition Hotels was one of the first to do it. They've already saved like tons. I don't know the specific number, but an insane amount of plastic going to the, that one hotel, the Edition Hotel Miami, they got rid of plastic spoons and they saved 650,000 spoons, like the chef told me the other week. So yes, it's a huge impact.
Okay, but I always think about this, and actually producer Vanessa and I were having this conversation about, you know, climate change and recycling and being, if you are the one person that you feel like are doing it, and if when you're doing this, is it actually impacting in the way that it would actually help an entire world and nation? Because that's what we need. It's like we're the only little speck that's actually believing in it. So really, does this, even if this does happen, and yeah, they are saving a lot, it still feels like there needs to be, a lot needs to be done. You know, like it's just not this that's going to solve the issue.
Well, yeah, completely. But as a consumer, you have purchasing power, and you're also telling your brand by not using single-use toiletries or whatever it is, that the brands need to also follow suit. And then the brands have the most impact, and then the brands affect policy. So it's like all of a domino effect. So yes, if you think one person can make a difference in the world, then you definitely can make a difference just by stopping using single-use plastic.
Yeah, and why is the use of single-use plastic, why is it such a hot topic in focus right now?
Because I think single-use plastic is one of the easiest things that we can all do and get rid of. Plastic bottles were introduced until the 90s. Plastics itself, single-use plastics wasn't introduced until, you know, a few decades ago. Our grandparents and parents' generation, they reused other things. You would, you know, have a milk bottle and you would always use the same milk bottle and they would refill that milk bottle. So plastics is not something that we have lived so much longer without plastic. And so it's really easy to change that behavior. And it's like a great entry, low hanging fruit for everyone to get on board. And plastic is so important because once plastic exists, it lasts forever. It goes into the ocean, it changes into microplastics, and plastic can never be turned into anything else besides plastic. It will exist forever in some shape or form.
Yeah, and we're seeing the repercussions of this now. Can you describe some of the impacts of us using all this plastic and where it goes? Because some people like might need to get a sense of this to really understand it.
Yeah. Well, a lot of plastic ends up in our ecosystem, especially in our water system and into the ocean. And I'm sure most of us have seen those really appalling and shocking images of all those plastic bottles or you know, Starbucks green straws on our ocean fronts. And yeah, it's not just like a pollution thing, but the plastics breaks down to what is called microplastics. And the microplastics is consumed by wildlife, but not just by marine life, but we consume almost a credit card's worth of microplastic every day. And microplastic is found in tap water, in salt, like 90% of table salt, we find microplastics. And that affects our health. Like, it goes beyond just, like, polluting our environment. It's polluting our bodies, too.
Whoa. I think we're all just like, oh, my God.
That is a lot. I do wonder, yeah. though, do you feel like with Hyatt being the last international hotel brand to actually make this change, are they doing it because they genuinely want to, or are they doing it because they notice their competitors have moved into this and it could also lose them money if they don't?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if it's like, you know, a marketing push, because as long as they're doing it, that's what matters.
Well, don't you want the brands you're spending your money at to actually genuinely be wanting to make a change and make a difference instead of just doing it? Kind of like Chick-fil-A, where Chick-fil-A is like, oh, we're not going to donate to anti-LGBTQ places anymore because they're noticing they're taking a hit in their bank.
Yeah, but I almost think like, but with plastic, it's not political. Well, I mean, I guess it can be if you don't believe in climate change. But the thing is go back to your thing, is that if the consumer is demanding it, the brands are responding like Hyatt. And even if they don't want to do it, in a few years, it's not even going to be an option because all of the states will have laws implicating that you can't use single-use toiletries like California already does.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even matter if the brand doesn't want to do it because there will be policy that affects it.
Yeah.
So, and I'd rather them just do it even if they're forced. Like at this point, it just makes a difference. What alternatives are hotels offering when they take this away?
I hope not paper straws. Those are the worst. Give us metals. Well, I love the metal straws. Those are cute.
The alternatives that hotels are offering are toiletries, at least. I mean, it will still be a plastic, but it won't be single use. So it'll be like a big container of shampoo like that you have at home, and it'll have a pump in it, you know? Or it'll have glass bottles that's hooked to the wall. And there's also a lot of inventions happening now where it's like fish guts being used into plastic, sea kale, like churning, being incorporated, has the same physical texture as plastic. Everyone hates paper straws, but there's going to be a lot like wheatgrass straws and other kinds of straws that has the similarity to plastic straws, but it's not plastic.
All right. Well, Sophia Lee, thank you for making us informed about all of this today. Where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, you can follow me at SOPHFEI.
Okay, she's awesome. She does great work around this industry. So thanks again for being with us.
She's very informed. I like her.
Thanks, guys. Fantastic.
Yes, exactly. And now coming up, how to be there for your partner after they lose their job without annoying them. We're going there next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
You know, it's hard enough to be in a relationship and make it work, but yeah. Imagine losing your job while in a relationship because it just creates a ton of stress and also impacts your mental health. Also, actually, it can impact your sex drive, by the way.
No, for sure. I mean, that is actually what happened at one point in my relationship where I had left a job for another job that I had thought was going to work out. It ended up being a complete nightmare. And so while I left that job, I was jobless for a couple of months. And it really took a hit on my last relationship where, one, that person, my partner, became a breadwinner, and then I was kind of frustrated that I couldn't find something quick enough, and it just built up all this turmoil and kind of resentment in the relationship, and it can just be very stressful when it's like you're looking for the right job. Job hunting is just the most depressing thing ever.
Or yeah, and I think just like not making money and not knowing where your life is, if your identity is so connected to that, it happens
exactly.
to be in a relationship too. And it like really, I mean, it's a big reason why I think my last relationship didn't work besides other reasons. But we have actually, is coming up, someone joining us who's a career coach, because we all know that this is a reality, but what do you do when you're stuck in a situation where you lose your job and you want to focus on that, but you also want to make sure your relationship doesn't fall apart, and how do you manage it all, right? It's the ultimate balance. So we have a career coach joining us after this to dive into that and to help all of us out.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, before the break, we talked about how much it sucks when you lose your job and you're in a relationship and what happens. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about how do we can get out of that dark hole when you're in it. Whether you're the person who lost their job or you're the partner who wants to help the person you love out without, you know, annoying them, because that sucks. So joining us to help us navigate that is John Rocha, Director of Career Services at Ama La Vida. He's a career coach. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Hey.
So this can be there's a lot of angles to this that we want to look at. So I guess like when you lose your job and, you know, I think some people take some time because these days people want some time. But it can be hard to get
time to take time.
Yeah.
Most people are poor and they can't take time. And they're like, oh, I need to get some money.
But how do you balance that out and make sure that, I guess, your relationship doesn't fall apart in the meantime? Because it does become a big focus when you do lose a job.
Of course. And of course, the magic answer is just to suddenly have money and time all at once fall from the heavens. But of course, it's not going to happen.
Manifestation, you know.
Well, I do know, like, I guess, how do you know when it's the right time to even bring up, like, job positions? Because, you know, oftentimes, as someone, if you are dating someone, you actually have a true relationship with them and you love them, you want to see them be fine. You want to see them be okay. So how do you know when it's the right time to kind of help them or even bring up job positions that you may have seen for your partner?
We always immediately want to step in. We love our partners. We want to help them. We want to jump in, rescue them, save the day. That's always the inclination. So often, though, that can be the opposite of what the partner really needs. When they first lose that job, we can lose so much of our sense of self-worth. We can lose emotional resonance. We can really feel like the rug got pulled out from under us. And the very first thing that needs to happen, it's just that cushion, that safety net that says, no matter what, I don't tie your worth to your job. I don't tie your value to your employment. I still love you. I still support you. This has to be a space of some safety and comfort, or they're not going to have any solid ground to stand on in order to move forward. So that's got to be step one.
Yeah, so you don't want to bring up, like, let's look at, like, not Craigslist, but like, let's look at the job board together. Or like, you don't want to bring
When's
that up right away.
When's the last time you found a job on Craigslist?
You might want to, do you want to distract them or be more of an escape?
I think initially, a space of normalcy is very important. So I'm talking 24, 48, 72 hours. Let their life still be their life. If you had plans, do those plans. If you were going to go out for date night, still go out for date night. You know, you can maybe pare down the money that you're going to spend if you feel like that's a concern. But try not to make it feel like because they lost their job that suddenly also everything else in their life is going to fall down like a house of cards. And that, oh, on top of the guilt that they're already going to feel from losing a job, they're going to feel like they're letting their partner down, or they feel like they're not going to be keeping up with their family responsibilities. Let that immediate emotional impact be softened by some normalcy first. Then there's plenty of room to take active steps to help, but they really have to feel supported first.
So
it's not right to go right to Craigslist on that first two hours.
Or whatever, wherever you're looking for a job.
I mean, LinkedIn is a place.
LinkedIn. Oh, yeah, that site.
Yeah. So, you know, what if your partner is, you know, struggling, and I would love to stay there for a little bit, because, you know, it often is very hard. And what if they are struggling just to try to figure out what they want to do next? How can you help them, or should you even help them try to figure that out? Because oftentimes, if you get fired, this isn't a clear opportunity for you to find out what's that next chapter in your life.
Absolutely. And being forward facing and positive is so great in any scenario. And if they come to you and ask you that, it's the right time. There has to be that little bit of reaching out from them. You want to show that you're providing that support, that you're ready to go. But if you come to them and kind of unprompted say, hey, I printed out 15 job listings for you and I ironed your suit so that you can go interview, or I polished up your shoes, or I did all these things, it can really feel like you are guilting them and you are pushing them. And there's that fine line between support and encouragement. You have wings. You can fly. You can do anything, versus that kind of toe tapping. Why don't you have a job yet?
Mm. Yeah. At what point should you be aware there are flags that this is a bigger issue than maybe you can handle, or that it's more than just like a little like hand holding and support? Because if someone is out of a job for a bit of a time, it could lead to bigger things.
Yes. And something that you do want to have early, not so early that it's within maybe that first 72-hour mark, but definitely within that first week, is the discussion about what the long-term schedule is going to be. If you've been saving for a long time, or you're more financially stable, or the other partner still has plenty of income, then maybe you can have the conversation that says, I'd rather you take more time and find something you truly love and will feel passionate about, rather than feeling pressured to jump immediately into a survival role. But you can be realistic. And if you say, hey, between the two of us, we only were just barely getting by, we do need something coming in more quickly, let's talk about what that budgeting is going to look like. I cannot tell anyone what their budgeting mix should look like, but I can tell you that the conversation happening early is important, because you don't want rent to be due without having had any discussion about who's paying what when one partner isn't.
No, yeah, for sure. Finances can be such a big part of why a lot of relationships go downhill. And so it can often be uncomfortable having those conversations. So do you, like you said, do you just wait after that 72-hour mark? Or what if it is immediate and you have to have it immediately, like thinking of what's next? How can you do that?
If there's a situation where it's so dire that, you know, the bills aren't going to get paid in the next week, then ideally you've had some conversations before then, because if the money is that tight that we're going to be out in the cold a week after someone loses their job, hopefully you have at least some context for having that discussion with each other and you know that.
Yeah.
If it's going to be longer than that, though, sitting down and making a plan to make a plan. So give them 24, 48 hours of normalcy and then say, hey, in a very safe environment with no other pressures, no outside influences, let's turn off the devices, let's sit together, you and I, and make this plan, right? All sit down and talk about what you want to do, what's expected.
Yeah.
If they do want to take a month off, again, there's no right or wrong way, as long as both people support each other and they're in agreement. So
well, it
having
sounds
that
like,
discussion
yeah.
early.
It sounds like it's budget and chill.
And if that's the way it goes, that could be a great way to return to normalcy, right?
Yeah, it's cute. Add a little humor in it. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
John Rocha, again, thank you. John is the Director of Career Services at Ama La Vida, a career coach. Now, coming up, we've got what's trending in the news, top of the hour, what Hillary Clinton has to say about allegations that she's anti-transgender, coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, we're getting into what's trending in the news right now. A shout out to Miami, who's hosting me this week. Our friends, Power 96.5 HD3. Thanks for having us. And now let's move on to some Hillary Clinton news. She's responding.
What a good shout out. Quick little shout out moment for me.
Yeah, might as well.
I love
they've
Miami.
Been awesome.
I've still never been, so maybe I'll come down and visit you.
Let's do a trip. Let's make it happen.
I wasn't inviting you, but okay.
Let's move on to more important matters, like Hillary Clinton.
Yes,
who's responding to allegations that she is anti-transgender. This, of course, comes from comments she made about her generation's difficulty understanding the trans identity. She said, "This is a moment for every single one of us to affirm that transgender people deserve equality, safety, and opportunity." She wrote that on Facebook today. Now, a meme accompanying the post stating "trans rights are human rights." That's a post, you know, we've all seen that and even posted it ourselves, echoes what she's trying to share, and that she told the UN in 2011, gay rights are human rights and human rights are gay rights. So she's spoken out about the community and her support of the community, but some of these comments she's recently made kind of make that questionable. She has publicly supported trans equality for years, saying in a human rights campaign speech in 2015, "We need to say with one voice that transgender people are valued, they are loved, they are us." She also has endorsed the Equality Act, which is currently pending in the Congress, which would ban discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation in employment, housing, and other aspects of life nationwide. So is this enough, Ryan, for you?
Here's the thing. I'm not a part of the trans community, so I can only...
your perspective.
From my perspective, I can only say that her comments were very TERF-like, and that was alarming, and people have been alarmed by a lot of her views recently while she's been on this book tour of hers. But her coming out on the last day of this, I think, as long as, you know, she meant it and the community feels heard and seen, and she backtracked on her comments and she saw how harmful those could be, then, let's move forward. Let's do what she's doing. I mean, she's not like she's running for president anytime soon.
That's true. Can we do another What's Trending in the News story?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, this one I like because, you know, I'm all about the Impossible Burger. Well, I love that burger, man. I'm getting really hungry, actually.
Ooh, are you?
Well, a self-described vegan is suing Burger King for allegedly misleading consumers by not informing everyone that its Impossible Whoppers are flame broiled with the help of beef fat. Now, this is such a mistake that I cannot believe they did this.
All right, well, guess what? Were they supposed to have a completely different grill? Duh.
Yeah, because it's a misinformation. If you're marketing something as Impossible Whoppers, then it's like it's for vegans, basically.
They are.
So, yeah. The Impossible Whoppers sorry, guys. The Impossible Whoppers.
Uh-huh.
They are vegetarian. No one said they were vegan.
But beef fat ones are.
Then that's still messing it up, because then even vegetarians can't do beef fat. Okay? So this person, Philip Williams of Georgia, is doing a class or seeking a class action status for his lawsuit on behalf of similarly situated individuals. Maybe I should join.
You don't even eat Burger King.
No, I haven't eaten that. I've eaten where was the one we went to, Vanessa? We tried it.
Carl's Jr.'s.
That was really good.
That is so gross. I can't believe you did
No,
that.
It's actually the best thing. All right. So Philip is saying the fast food company cooks its vegan patties on the same grills as its traditional burgers, thus covering the outside of the Impossible Whoppers meat-free patties with meat byproduct. No, it's wrong, Ryan.
I just don't understand where you thought they were going to be cooked. I'm so confused.
They should be doing it on another grill.
In the microwave?
No.
Are they going to build a whole... This isn't kosher food.
It says, listen to this. For guests looking for a meat-free option, a non-broiler method of preparation is available upon request. And that's what they've added. It says a footnote on the website, which is so tricky.
So guess what? You should have been reading.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you're going to go to the website when you're ordering in a drive-thru.
Maybe.
That's like exactly where everyone is going. So a lot of people are saying that they were duped because it does say that it's meat-free. Customers have now taken to social media for months to talk about the cooking method. One Twitter user said, "What is the point of the Impossible Whopper if the patty's cooked on the same broiler as the beef patties? And I wonder how many people know." Well, now everyone knows, and everyone's going to be trying to sue Burger King.
Well, we'll most definitely keep you updated on the Burgergate, because this is some hard-hitting news. But
if we talk about your Popeye chicken thing, we're going to talk about this.
Why you bring up chicken, Shira? Huh?
Yeah. I'm hungry. Okay, coming up, we're going to be getting into the story about a teacher who gave eating or diet advice to someone's kid. And we're asking you, should teachers have a say in kids' eating habits? That's coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, this story is pretty wild. And imagine this happening to your child. And I want you to think, like, what would you do in this situation? So Francesca Easton sent her 5-year-old son Kyler to school with a really nice note inside of his lunch bag, as, you know, parents do. This one read, "Please tell Kyler that his mommy loves him so much and that I'm thinking about him." So the mom is from Texas, and she said that her family has been working with her and she said, quote unquote, so this is what she's saying, "extremely picky son to make healthier choices, and had discussed their nutrition goals with Kyler's school, hoping they would be supportive. But when Kyler returned home from school that day, she actually found a response from one of the daycare's teachers written in black marker. And the note said this, okay? It said, "No, put him on a diet and go away."
Are you kidding me?
No, I mean, talk about compassion, right? So after
I'm coming up to the school and possibly showing out. That's what I'm talking about, because that is rude.
Well, this is what she did instead. After confronting the school, Easton, the mom, posted on Facebook urging parents to be extra cautious when choosing where to send their children to nursery. She said, "Instead of the school being supportive, I'm in absolute shock at what happened. I was assured it was being investigated and handled, yet almost no remorse was shown. I also brought to their attention the fact that on this teacher's public Facebook page, there were mass posts regarding drug use and other very inappropriate content. The teacher confessed after this happened and was fired, but the school still showed zero remorse for their actions." I guess it brings up the bigger question. Oh, no. Should teachers have a say in kids' eating habits?
You know, here's the thing. I do not believe so. I don't believe that as well. And here's where I'm coming from with the reason why I think they should stay in their own place and they need to mind their business. It's because oftentimes teachers, you know, especially when growing up, I would see teachers overstepping their boundaries and saying things or doing things that were quite disrespectful to parents. There is a difference between saying, you know, saying something in a polite email or saying something when they see a child, you know, a parent at a parent-teacher conference where they kind of say, oh, hey, I kind of been noticing this and this is also taking place. And I just want to kind of put it into the atmosphere. But to do something like this and kind of one lose their minds or say something crazy like this is wild.
No,
like,
put him on a diet and go away.
That's wild.
Was this teacher on like drugs or
No, not even. But Shira, this isn't not in this way. But you know, when I was younger, I was obviously, and this all makes sense now. I was a talker. I would get in trouble for talking too much in class.
Oh, really?
I would get really in trouble. Like it would be so as bad because they were like, he's not paying attention. He's trying to be friends with everybody. And they would send home emails to my mom.
Okay.
Well, one year I was in grade school and actually a teacher was like, well, maybe you should get him tested for ADHD. Maybe he has a problem. Maybe he needs to be on medicine. And that is a place where if it's not affecting your studies or your testing, that is a place where a teacher will go too far and try to think they're a parent in that case when they need to realize, hey, you need to stay in a teacher's place and make sure my child is just educated in the way that they need to.
And then let me
handle the rest.
I see that. I think we both come from moms that are educators, and I think there's a difference between giving someone a prescription for something, like literally prescribing what you think, this is exactly what you should do.
Teachers are not doctors, are psychologists.
Or else you're not parenting in the right way. But a recommendation or sitting a parent down saying, hey, this has come to my attention and I want to talk to you about it so we can come up with a plan together is different.
But what would have came up? Here's the thing. What would have even came up in a conversation or came to her attention that he needs to be put on a diet?
Just to preface, they did talk about his eating habits and that they were discussing nutrition goals with the school.
I know the Facebook post, the mom said that he's just very picky, which every child is very picky. All they want to eat is sugar.
And then, but it also goes back to, like, when we talk about eating habits, it always goes back to that word diet, right? So that's also where there needs to be, like, less shit. Like, the whole diet situation at a young age is very problematic.
Exactly. And, do you think this teacher is actually saying it to the child? Like, do you think she's making something, like, remarks that are terrible in front of other kids and that's encouraging kids to bully him? Like, you don't know what's happening. If she was bold enough to do that and write that letter back to the mom, and probably the child saw that and could read.
Pre-K. I mean, you're going a bit to an extreme, Ryan.
Who knows?
I can maybe see what you're talking about.
At the end of the day, children feel when they are being judged at the end of the day, no matter how old they are, they know when something's wrong and they know when something's
true.
Right.
I just think there are good teachers out there that can handle these things responsibly, and this teacher didn't do it responsibly. So we actually asked the question on social media, and we'll be going to your responses right after this. Should teachers have a say in kids' eating habits? Stay tuned for that.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So should teachers have a say in kids' eating habits? Well, this story of a teacher saying, put your kid on a diet and go away, doesn't seem like the right way to go about doing it. But we actually asked you the question on social media. So what are people saying, Ryan?
Yes, thank you for throwing it to me. yes. Sorry, I was pulling it up. You know, the service here is just trash. Brian says, not a chance. Teachers are there to teach and educate, not regulate eating patterns, which I totally agree. They need to be minding their business and doing what they're being paid for.
Wait. Agreed, but then we talk about, one, kids are in school most of their days. Secondly, we talk about how schools need to provide better nutrition. And so how are we taking that now out of the scenario when we're talking about a teacher?
That's not what we're saying. That's not it at all. I think the difference between...
It's all
between
very intertwined, and it
no,
makes
it's
a
not.
difference.
Here's
what
the thing.
You eat and your nutrition...
But a pre-K child is not...
how you're able to...
Sis.
like. to focus and do good at school and your work.
Okay, Shira. Well, guess what? The when it comes to like having a lunch and what's on the lunch menu, that is up to the principal. That is up to the school system. That is that.
But yeah, teachers are part of a school
system.
But
a teacher should not be saying to a child or to a child's parent, put him on a diet.
Yeah, I don't like
you could have just called him a fat ass.
No, I don't like that.
That's rude.
But
no, they should not have a say in that.
Kids' eating habits. I think there's a way to go about doing it.
Have a meeting with the parents. Have PTA. That's what PTA meetings are for.
I don't think we could wait 3 months to have a PTA meeting. I think there's a way to go about doing it with compassion.
No, but there's groups. There's parents that have those groups like every month where they come in and they talk to teachers.
Every month is even 2 months. Every month, that month is like...
Are you kidding me?
It feels like a year sometimes.
I'm happy we don't have kids.
I think that... They should be able to do it in real time. There should be a safe way where they could text the parent.
Okay, Shira. Well, then you. How about a teacher? How about a teacher call in when Shira has a child and call? What would you do if your child was sent home with that?
I said I didn't like that note.
No, but just in general, don't you think that's a little bit too far?
Have a say in kids' eating habits. If a teacher said, "Hey, I've been noticing this because you're not there." And it's something to talk
but
about.
But you're packing
totally
the lunch. Would
that
not feel like it's a target at you, at your parent, at
so
your
then
parenting?
I would ask her, what does she mean? What does she think I should do then?
So why would you? But why is she going that
and
far? Because then it's going to start
end up eating.
No.
You know, because very healthy. Because
Shira,
I'm into
it's going to start off.
Diet.
It's going to start off with food. It's going to start off with food, and then they're going to say, "Well, little Suzanne came in with a runny nose. Shira, are you too busy? Can you not handle it?" And then they're going to get too comfortable. It's going to open a door where they are going to start commenting on how your parenting is.
That
is none of a
teacher's
business.
So this
unless
is
the
issue.
Child is looking like it's being harmed or he's being in a place where he's not, you know, focused because his personal life is messed up. That's the only time a teacher should be coming in. Not when it comes to what that child is eating for a pre-K lunch. Let that child eat his fruit roll-up.
That sounds good, actually. I forgot about this. I think that we want teachers to, you know, be more hands-on, but if they're hands-on, we want them to be hands-off. At a certain point, I think that we need to have open communication with teachers and a consistent, mode of communication because they are seeing things that we don't see, and I would want to know those things. I don't think the note is the way to do it. However, I am open to hearing feedback and having a conversation with someone who's with my kids a big part of the day.
Here's the thing. I've had teachers where I think it's just the way you do it because I've had teachers that are involved, but they know where that line stops because at the end of the day, those are not their kids. They are doing a job. So if the parent wants to raise their kids in a certain way, feed their kids in a certain way, also. Are they saying that this kid has an overweight issue? Like, what is it? What if this kid's not even overweight and they're overweight in their standards?
I think a diet could also be looked at as like a nutritional. It could be
no, but we're not breaking down. This isn't the dictionary. We're not breaking down what a diet means. This is what we're going off of this thing. But I do want to read another social media response.
Yeah, I want to hear the rest.
Someone said, "Define have a say. I give my high school students lots of advice about making good decisions in many areas, including diet, but they're under no obligation to obey me in these areas. I just hope they take the advice because I want them to be happy, healthy, and successful."
Exactly.
See, that's a teacher that wants that. That other teacher does not want that. She wanted to be rude because she's not getting paid enough.
Don't put that in their face.
It's true. No, it's true. That wasn't a low blow. That's true. When you are frustrated with your personal life, you start projecting your own situations onto other people and kids. You're not going to affect my kid.
And anytime you use an exclamation mark, that is a sign of stress.
I'm sorry. You're not going to put your projections of your insecurities on your body on my pre-K child. That's never going to happen.
Oh my God. I'm excited for your pre-K child, your future pre-K child.
He's going to be running in. I'm going to teach him how to tell. Girl, don't you send me home with this note.
Okay. We'll be back right after this.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Wow, that was an intense argument we had. We didn't even have an argument. We just got into it. We got very passionate.
Thank you. Here's the thing. I just want teachers to stay in a child's, in a teacher's place because guess what? They are not nutritionists. They are not medical doctors, and I do not want them to diagnose my child.
But I think
let the school nurse do it.
But. If the school has enough money to have a school nurse.
Right, right.
I mean, I think it all comes back to or comes down to compassion. And I think that if you do something with compassion and in good faith and with an open heart, then it doesn't come from a place of judgment.
Sure,
and it comes from a place of care.
You talk like a Disney movie sometimes. I just don't know how to really
move
through
it. Bring me that money, that Disney money.
So is it time for Yes, Queen?
Let's do our Yes, Queen of the Day. So 19-year-old Keegan Roberts has captured national attention for winning a seat on the City Council of South Berwick, Maine, a very small population of 7,500. Mm-hmm. And the reason is, well, one, he's young, he's 19, so that's... You know, he definitely gets our Yas Queen of the Day for being 19, a city council member, and he's also the youngest elected official in the U.S., and he's also gay.
Wait, so and they're part Yas of, Queens. Are they a part of the this guy, is he a part of the Out 100? Is that why, or just Out Magazine just did a thing?
No, Out Magazine did a feature on this, that's how he found
so
it.
So cool.
So he says, I hope that it doesn't matter how young you are, it doesn't matter how you identify, you can do whatever you put your mind to. And he won the election earlier in November and took his seat on the council last week. And he chose to seek political office after growing up with the charms of his small town. He also claims that he didn't experience much homophobia, thankfully, when he came out in school or around town. He says, I really didn't face too much bullying, at least to my face, which was nice. I also have a twin brother who's gay. So that kind of made high school a little bit easier. It's amazing. Yeah, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
I know a pair of siblings back at home that it's like a brother and sister, but they were like fraternal twins and they both were gay.
Yeah.
I love to like hear stuff like that because I mean, the more gay people, the better, honestly.
Of course.
But we love our allies and our heteros.
I just want everyone to live their truth, and that's the important thing.
Oh, good
Disney quotes there.
You sound like Glinda the Good Witch.
He ended up receiving more than 20% of the vote, more than any other candidate. He said there's a whole demographic that not really being completely spoken for because you don't really have anyone my age speaking. He hopes to give back to his community through his position and joins a growing number of queer Americans who are seeking or holding political office ahead of the 2020 election. So he gets Keegan Roberts, our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yeah. Yes, Queen. We should try to see if we can get him on the show and talk
should.
A little bit more about this because
that's
a big
really cool.
step. That's a big move, especially someone that is 19 to kind of have that type of mind frame already. It really shows that millennials and Gen Zers, we are all trying to like change the world. And no matter how our age, like what age we are, there's no limit to what we can
well,
do.
Well, yeah. And the government should be afraid because a new crop of people are coming in that can vote. And let me tell you.
Yep.
They know what they want and they're gonna be heard.
I mean, we're shaking some stuff up.
Yep, let's shake it up like a Polaroid picture.
Are you who kidding me? Can you not help yourself today?
No, I can't. I'm sorry.
Like a
I'm sorry,
Polaroid
so
picture.
Okay, that is our Yas Queen of the Day. If you want to nominate someone for a Yas Queen or a company, anyone doing awesome stuff, hit us up on social media at We Are Channel Q. Also, our personal socials are at Shira Lazar, that is mine. Mm-hmm. And this guy, my
co-host. I'm at the Slay God, GAWD.
Yep. We will be back tomorrow, same time. We're going to be getting into the next round of the Democratic debates.
Finally, they're here.
Yep. So we're going to talk about what you can expect, break it down for all the people that aren't paying attention, and how locker rooms across America could become more trans-inclusive and save lives, because tomorrow is Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow and check out our podcast on our site and wherever podcasts are available. Now here's Loveline with Dr. Chris.
Bye, guys.